He was quite a man too. Let's turn to Daniel, the first chapter, verse 5. Ezekiel, Daniel. And to get the background of what I'm going to be speaking on, let's read all the way down to 8 to start with here. 5 to 8. We know the background of this. This is the first portion of those taken captive after Nebuchadnezzar came into Jerusalem. And he took the choice young men in that captivity because he figured he could use them. And these choice young men were young men that were from higher positions, from kingships and from governors and so forth, because he figured that they would be more educated, which is basically true. And so he took these men. And then it tells us what happened to these men, really boys. And the king appointed for them a daily ration from the king's choice food and from the wine which he drank, and appointed that they should be educated for 3 years, at the end of which they would enter the king's personal service. Now, among them were the sons of Judah: Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Now, of course, they had other youth from other nations, but the ones we're going to concentrate, of course, on here are the Judeans. Then the commander of the officials assigned new names to them, and to Daniel he assigned the name Belteshazzar, Hananiah, Shadrach, Mishael, Meshach, and to Azariah, Abednego. But Daniel made up his mind that he would not defile himself with the king's choice food or with the wine which he drank, so he sought permission from the commander of the officials that he might not defile himself. Okay, it's the beginning of our key scriptures. Now, the wine that Daniel was given to drink, or was to be given to drink, was fermented. It's not that Greek word where you have to wonder which way it goes. It was the Hebrew word, yayin, and means to effervesce. Vapors come up, and of course that implies fermented. So this was fermented. Now you can imagine with the leisure that these kids were going to have, and that this would be a strong temptation to them to drink to excess, and in their free time especially. And Daniel could look at that and see, hey, there might be some problems. There might be some problems. And he didn't want to get involved in such problems. He didn't want to take a temptation to get drunk and so on. But the Old Testament, well, maybe I won't get ahead of this yet. In the Old Testament, it did allow people to drink fermented beverage. Anybody that doesn't know that, it's there and it's clear. But Daniel said, I'm not going to do that. Now, some of them inferred that the young men were made into eunuchs. Daniel was not a eunuch. And there's no evidence at all of that. In fact, a study shown on the practices of these Eastern leaders that come right up to just a few centuries. After Daniel was the same as it was under Nebuchadnezzar, and that is under the Ottoman Empire. They captured young men, or bought them sometimes, bought young men, and they put them under eunuchs, and they fed them good things, and things that are supposed to make them, you know, healthy, and so on, but they never made them eunuchs. So We have that all the way up to just recent generations. So we can project that backwards to the time of Daniel. Now, as was true under Daniel, again, is true under the Ottoman Empire, Turkey. And these men, once they had their training, why, they were appointed under the king's, in the king's court, and they could go into positions that were very high. The most talented or successful could go higher and higher and higher, and they could become almost second to the king. High court offices. They could become governors, military commanders, even become grand visors, chief ministers, and other high officials. True 200 years ago, true in Daniel's time. Now remember this, that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego received high positions. They did. So we see that things are similar. We can pretty well prove what went on back then by looking at things in our recent history. So I'm sure that Daniel and his partners were not dummies. They knew the potential for their future positions. They knew that they could raise, they could be rise to high positions. They knew that they could live a life of wine, women, and song, and power, and riches, and the intrigues of the court, and so on. They knew that. So what's that mean? Well, the fact that they decided to not get involved in this kind of stuff, receiving the king's portions, they made up their mind that they weren't going to. They knew they were possibly giving up all these good things that, you know, worldly people think are the greatest. It means they had great self-sacrifice, even though they were youthful. Did you know that youthful lusts, I'm sure we do, are among the worst, or are the worst? Yes, the lusts that we have in the youth are the strongest of all. And yet these men were not going to compromise. That's certainly noteworthy. Now, in verse 6 here, we find out that they were given new names. That was true even in the Ottoman Empire, again, about 200 years ago or whatever. And the reason for that, of course, was to help them disassociate themselves from the land that they came from, that they were conquered from, and get prepared to think the way that the land that they were going to serve in under the king, get those ideas in their mind. So they even renamed them. So now, in Daniel's case, the renaming was really important, because Daniel had a name, and so did Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that had Jehovah in it. And so certainly Nebuchadnezzar would want to get those, anything reference to Jehovah, out of there. And so they really need to be renamed. So now, one thing they had to do, they had to learn the language of the king and his country, and they had to learn it perfectly. Now that's something. You hardly ever find, say, example, a Spanish American that learns the English without any differences, any what do they call that? When they speak a little differently? Rare. The only Mexican-American people that have no of these, again, whatever.
Accent.
There it is. That's what I meant. are the ones that grew up and they knew American too. Their mom and dad taught them American as well as the Spanish, and they grew up that way. They can have a perfect English. Otherwise, it's very, very difficult to have a perfect English if you learn that after you learned your Spanish. Well, these men were required to speak a perfect Arab language, Babylonian language. Now, in verse 6 again, now among them were the sons of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Meshach, and Azariah. Then the commander of the officials assigned new names to them, but Daniel made up his mind, and so did Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that they were not going to eat these dainties from the king. They made up their mind. Even in captivity, these sons of Abraham, God's people, made their mark. These three did anyway. The other Jews, sometimes you wonder about, because when it came time to worship, for example, the image that Nebuchadnezzar made, where were the other Jews when Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego didn't bow? What were they doing? Apparently bowing. Now, Daniel was not there, I'm confident. He was off somewhere and probably doing business for the king in a foreign governorship of the king, whatever, because he would not have bowed either. Four people wouldn't have bowed. What happened to the rest of the Jews? So they made their mark, these four great men. And it's still true. People that make up their mind to serve God and will not compromise leave their mark. Don't ever think it's not, doesn't do much good to follow God's ways. You will leave your mark. That may not be your purpose to leave a mark in the sense of, I want to leave a mark so people remember me, but I want to leave a mark so that people can, if they do remember back to me, they'll remember that I serve God, and they'll get examples from me and so on, and that'll encourage them to serve God. Just like Jesus said, let your light shine. Why? So that you can be bloated up? No. So that men may glorify God. You will leave a mark. 1 Corinthians 15:33 says, be ye steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of God, knowing that your labor will not be in vain. You're going to leave a mark. You're going to get good done. If you're on God's side, I don't care how smart you are or how unsmart you are. God will bless you, and you will get things done. The Jews say that Daniel was a member of the royal family, probably Hezekiah, so he was well up there. And, of course, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego would be too. And one thing remarkable about that is that what happens in most cases when kids are raised up under high officials, like today, what happens in America when kids are raised up under rich fathers and mothers that make millions of dollars or thousands of dollars? Yeah, ego goes to their head, and they're just, they think they have everything figured out. And they're not willing to make self-sacrifices, are they? Because they haven't been taught when they were growing up to make self-sacrifices. They didn't have to. These men were from such positions as that. And so that makes it even more remarkable that they were willing to self-sacrifice the king's dainties and thus take a chance of even giving up their future positions because they wanted to serve God. So in the case of these four, they made up their mind they're going to serve the true God. The other 1,000 Jews, however many it was, they apparently didn't make up their mind. So, now we want to go to a verse that's often used and talk more about it. First of all, I'm going to get some of this water so I don't quite lisp so much. Daniel purposed in his heart, but even more important, and remember this point, he kept on purposing in his heart until death, not to defile himself and live ungodly. Why do I put the emphasis on that? Well, a person that purposes early in their life to serve God and are still serving him faithfully at the end, that is a very good thing. But a person that purposes to serve God early in life, and at the end you don't find them serving God, it would be better for them never to have begun. So the whole thing, or a lot of the thing, comes down to keeping on, keeping on. A bad end with a good beginning ends up being totally worthless, and even worse than if you never had a good beginning. And that's what the scriptures teach us. 2 Peter 2:20, for example, you know, like a swine returning to its own, getting all dirty again. Hebrews 10:26, those who go on sinning willfully after receiving the knowledge of the truth, what do they have left? Terrifying expectation of judgment. They have insulted the Spirit of grace. A person that never even got a good start to start with, he hasn't insulted the Spirit of grace. Because that's a greater insult, at least you can say, to once have served God and his Spirit and Jesus, and then go backwards. That's a special insult. And Hebrews 6 brings that up. Crucifying the Son of God afresh and putting him to an open shame is what happens to people that begin good and end bad. That's worse than a person that never began good. Maybe that's part of the reason why Jesus said, be either hot or cold. At least if you're cold, you never re-crucified Christ. Now, we can call these men that begin good and bad traitors. They are the worst. When you think of the word traitor, that's one of the worst names you can give to people. And they understand it. They are traitors to the cause. They began and they gave it up. And so the point is, brethren that have begun good and then in their later years have gone the way of the Christian church and so on, they are traitors. Traitors to the cause. Now, regarding Daniel's purposing in his heart, and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego also, of course, he formed this idea as a decided purpose. I'm not going to eat of the king's dainties. I'm not. Not, I'm not. But just plain, I'm not going to do it. Why was it that easy? Well, it was a simple matter of right and wrong before Jehovah. And the only answer was set in glass. Regardless of what problems might come because of this decision, the answer that he was to give to himself and live by was obvious. I serve God. He probably didn't have to do a lot of thinking about that beforehand. In fact, he likely didn't do hardly any thinking. All he had to think on is what's right and what's wrong. and I'm going to do the right. Now, a lot of people, when they make decisions, why they think it over, and they think of the cost, and of course the Bible says we should consider the cost, of course, but they think it over, and they think it over, and if they figure out that it's not going to be too hard to live the Christian life, say, oh, then I'll do it. Their decision whether or not to live it is based on how much it's going to cost them. And if it doesn't look like much, they'll say, I'm going to do it. But that's not the way decisions ought to be made as far as the actual decision itself. Whenever we have a case of right, clear right and clear wrong, obvious right and obvious wrong, whether we know all about the hows and wherefores and problems that will be involved when we make this choice, that doesn't matter. The decision is made anyway. Then later on, why we take care of whatever problems are. There are certainly problems involved in our desire and our decision to do right, but we must face them, and if we don't, we are called another word that people don't like to be called, and that's cowards. We decide to live the Christian life, and we're getting going real well. Then after a while, we run into some problems. And we drop it. Cowards! Revelation 21 lists that as number one in the list of its long list. But for the cowardly or the unbelieving. There are certainly going to be problems and difficulties when we decide to serve God. And we do not budge. And today I'm going to zero in one particular area. Let me see now, when am I done? 20 till? Is that it? Probably. So I'm going to have to go through quickly. But I have to say, here, the plan of salvation, I'm going to deal with that. We have many, many brethren that have fudged on a plan of salvation. And it's easy to fudge on that because it means if you fudge on it, well, you can consider your very closest relatives and friends and so forth and people in other churches as saved too. If you don't fudge on it, then you got to realize, hey, there's only a few that are really following it anymore. And I'm going to present to you, and it's going to have to be here in about 7 minutes, some information that I have studied on regarding this plan of salvation issue. How's this relate to Daniel? Daniel made up his mind. He was going to follow God's plan of salvation, basically. And he kept his mind made up. So, what I got here is the answers to 24 Christian Church, Church of Christ instrumental Bible colleges. You look in your computer, you'll find a list, in fact it's there a couple times, of the major Christian Church, Church of Christ Bible colleges. And then you can get their email address and so on. And I took that list of 24. Really, there was 25, but one, Puget Sound, just closed its doors. And I wrote to each one of those. And my question was something along this order. Dear sirs, please pass on this to the appropriate party if necessary. I believe sincerely and completely in the Lordship of Jesus, I believe sincerely and completely in the Lordship of Jesus Christ. However, if I couldn't lie, So I used if, hypothetical. If I believe I was saved from my sins at a Billy Graham crusade, when I pray Jesus into my heart to forgive me of my sins, and was baptized several months later in the Baptist church, would you accept me as a Christian brother if I enroll at, in this case it's Boise, or must I be rebaptized first? Not a one. I got 22 that responded out of the 24 that I thought was pretty good. And not a one of those said I would have to be rebaptized. Not a one. Where are all the preachers coming from out of these CC/CCs, Christian Church, Churches of Christ Instrumental? Where are the preachers coming from? These places. Not one of those Bible colleges said that I'd have to be rebaptized. So basically they're saying a sinner's prayer baptism is acceptable. And you know what that gets rid of? Sins is not necessary. And that's what that means. Because if you believe your sins are already taken away, you cannot believe that they're going to be taken away at baptism. And that means you never obeyed Peter. Now, I don't know how anybody can be baptized for the purpose of remission of sins if you believe your sins have already been taken away. And I don't know how anybody can appeal to God for a good conscience if they got their good conscience when they pray Jesus into their heart. They've never done any either one of those. But every one of these schools said, I wouldn't need to be rebaptized. This goes a step further. Let's look at what was considered until most recently the most conservative Bible college in the area. Well, they tell me it's Moberly. And I believe that's probably the case because like Don Hunt Jr. sent his girl Martha there, and I think a number of the people that are kind of related to the Snell somehow, they went there and so on, because they taught and they stuck to baptism for the remission of sin. Well, but then problems came up. Do you know who I got the most enthusiastic answer from? Moberly. They said, we will accept you with open arms. That most recent one that made the most recent change has completely degraded. There's none left. I don't know of a single major Christian church, Church of Christ, Bible college. You know, I'm accepting our brotherhood, of course, that teaches baptism for the purpose of remission of sins. There's none left. So what's that mean? That means that you can expect out there in this religious world a massive, massive majority of Christian churches and churches of Christ instrumental that don't hold to the plan of salvation. And you know what that means? It's not quite so easy to say anymore. You hear about a lot of churches becoming fellowshipping with the Christian churches. Of our churches, or at least used to be. Case in point, Dave down there in Tucson, Dave Hallstrom, okay. We noticed the last time we went there that he had things on the board that indicated fellowship with the Christian church. Now, Dave Hallstrom probably did not know this, but it's his business as a leader to figure it out. His chances were about 100 to 1, probably, that Christian church that he fellowshiped with believed in the plan of salvation. Okay. But just based on what I'm presenting here, just looking at that, chances 100 to 1, maybe less than that. And so I've heard, different people have told me about people in their own local congregations right from here that have gone off to the Christian church, and they say there's not that much difference. Oh yes, there is. You not only, if you decide, well, we're a little bit too radical in our standards of holiness, and so I'm going to go to the Christian church, you need to realize But when you make that decision, you have not only got an easier life regarding holiness, but you have given up the plan of salvation. And if you find a Christian church, and I have yet to find one yet, or Church of Christ Instrumental, you know, they use them interchangeably, that stands for the plan of salvation, and here's the clue, as the only way, they will all, or most of them, stand for the plan of salvation. They'll teach you that. But if you don't agree, they'll accept you anyway. And furthermore, if you come from a Baptist church or another sinner's prayer church, they may not even ask you. And if they do, and you say, well, I went forward and I prayed the prayer, sinner's prayer, they'll still accept you. Here is proof. So, they will be an island unto themselves. And I'll bet, if that's a proper word to use, that just about everybody that has gone off to a Christian church didn't go to one of these islands set off by themselves. They just went to a whole organization where everybody, and the fellowship issue is the issue. You know, I really didn't have to write to all these colleges. I didn't. All I had to do, really, is find out who fellowships with who. That would have answered it, but this, you know, makes it more set in stone. So, we've got a terrible problem in the brotherhood. And I feel it's necessary, I guess I'm just 1 minute over, to say this quickly. I'm going to warn you about one man, because I think he's the worst, has the worst influence of anybody among our brotherhood. His name is Vic Knowles. He's head of the One Body Movement. And you can write him and you'll never get a clear answer as to what he believes on baptism, because I've sent him 3 letters and I can't get a clear answer. So I had to go about other ways in order to find out what he believed in. First of all, it makes it very obvious that since he's leader of the One Body Movement, and we have now shown that the massive, massive majority of CC/CCs don't stand for the plan of salvation as the only way, who's he have to work with if he is just working with the true faithful ones? There's nobody left. I mean, do you think a guy that can work with 6 million people is going to work with 60? 600? No. Besides, he associates with Ozark. And Ozark, I wrote them, and they'll accept me as a brother without rebaptism. And he is, I have right here where he's going to be a speaker, Cincinnati Bible Institute, one of the, probably the biggest, and he's going to be a speaker right along with the other, the president and so forth. And the president knows of this letter that I got from Cincinnati. Cincinnati would accept me. They said, we won't quibble about the timing of when you receive salvation. We believe it's clear that you get it at baptism, but if you want to believe that you got it at the sinner's prayer, we won't quibble about that. So again, that's the idea. We believe it's this way, and it's the correct way, but other ways are acceptable. And there's a whole lot more. I've got much, much proof, more proof on this guy, but I could never get it directly. And I know there's a lot of you, or some of you out here, or in other Christians that aren't here, that have him on your, what do they call it, face page? Where you have friends, you know, that kind of thing. Facebook, whatever. Do you know what I did? I just one time, a guy showed me how to use it, and so I don't have it, but I looked, and you can pick a certain guy that's on a certain person's list, and you can then look up that guy and see all who his friends are. And then you can pick any of the lists of those friends and look up him and see all the friends.
You can actually literally go through and find out virtually just about everybody who's on anybody's list. And Vic Knowles was on a lot of those lists. And I just heard a testimony as of yesterday that Vic Knowles had some responsibility for a person that was a member of our churches that went to the Christian church. So I'm going to warn you about him, because he is well accepted among our brotherhood. That's where the danger lies. These colleges aren't accepted among our brotherhood. They're not much of a danger. Vic Knowles is. All over the Midwest, they think highly of him. And so there's a great danger. And I think I'll stop here.